Why have I asked my HVAC guy I found on Angie.com to change my grandpa's trachea tube? Because I was so amazed by how quickly he replaced our air ducts. I knew I could trust him to change Pop-Pop's tube while I was on vacation.
Make it quick, young man.
Aw, see? Pop-Pop trusts you.
I think we should call a doctor.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? Maintain X is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With Maintain X, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try Maintain X for free today. Go to maintainx.com/AI. That's maintain and the letter x.com/AI.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.
Welcome back to Inside the Clubhouse. David Haw here with Bruce Levine every Saturday morning, 9 to 11, 52 weeks a year, talking baseball, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. And Bruce, we have another very special guest to join us on the Score Hotline, presented by Alpamonte Ford, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park on North Avenue, or apford.com.
The new voice of the marquee sports network for Cub baseball, joining our good friend JD, the one and the only John Boog Shambi, nice enough to take some time out on a Saturday morning to do some chit-chatting with me and you, David. Good morning, Boog. How are you today?
Good morning, Boog.
Good morning, guys. How are we doing?
Great.
We're doing good. We're doing good. I know you're doing basketball today somewhere.
I am.
Aren't you?
I am. I'm doing it.
Are you there?
Live from my apartment.
Who you got?
I got Texas and West Virginia. I got a good matchup, 12 against 13. So we got a good game. But yes, live from my apartment. So the atmosphere will be, you know, it is what it is.
What does Shaka Smart think about the cup rotation?
Yeah, man. Well, it's just weird.
I think I detect the same sarcasm that I present to everybody else myself after being cooped up for 11 months from Boog.
Yeah.
When you're a people person like you are, Boog, it's got to be, you know, devastating, because what we do is all about the people and contacting and getting info from them, getting their trust, you know, building those great relationships. It's been a little different.
You know, it's funny though, because you say all that, and obviously I would agree with all of it, but I don't think until I've gone through this that I realized how much that is the crucial part of this job. Look, I love baseball. Mm-hmm. I love baseball more than I love broadcasting. I mean, I just love baseball. But exactly what you said, connecting with players, general managers, talking the game, getting stories, getting guys to tell me their stories because they trust me, humanizing the players, all of it, and the in-person interaction, you know, like just sitting here watching it off of a monitor does not satisfy what this gig normally delivers. I starve for that in-person interaction. And even though I was aware of it, I don't think I recognized, at least in terms of for me, how much of what I enjoy about this job is being around the other humans and all the pieces of doing a broadcast in person and all the parts that go with it that are about connection. And, you know, this has been pretty disconnected, you know?
Boog, this offseason for the Cubs, it's you have to almost take time to remind Cubs fans that this is a team coming off a division title. Just right. Because of the way that this has gone, and I think the conversation, present company included, has built around a series of moves or non-moves that I think have left a lot of people a little bit frustrated or flummoxed or looking for answers. I think you could make the argument that you were the biggest offseason acquisition for the Cubs. And I say that sort of, you know, tongue-in-cheek, but you know what I mean. There has been this sense of, boy, you know what, the Cubs are coming back to defend their division title, but it doesn't feel that way. How good do you think this Cubs team can be, and do you sense that sort of consternation among the Cub fan base?
Yeah, I sense it. Look, being a fan is, in part, it's about being emotional, and you're connected to your team, and I get it, and I understand it. I definitely sense what you're talking about. I think that this team can be good. I think that this team might be able to win the division because I think, you know, Bruce has made this point. I think this division is there for the taking, even with Arenado going to the Cardinals. You know, this is not the Central where, you know, you had three teams averaging close to 95 wins with the Cardinals, the Pirates, and the Cubs, or the Brewers, the Cardinals, and the Cubs. This is going to be, I think, you know, if somebody wins 90, it's yours. Now, that said, I do think that the two elite teams in the league reside in the West, and the Padres and the Dodgers, and I think that the Mets and the Braves are going to be really good. So I think that it's a matter of perspective. I would make this other point. I know, and this is hard as a fan to digest, but you'd have to at least concede, if you think about it from the Cubs standpoint, that solving this is not simple. This team's complicated. They had a group of players that won in 2016, and that position-playing core has been erratic. And so to understand or try and figure out what do you actually have of the group, who are you definitely wanting to invest in long-term, it's not easy to say, and it's still a group that, you know, payroll-wise, it's high. So you're trying to figure out how do we sustain this so that we continue to be good. You know, you can't just throw money on top of money on top of money. So they're in a hard position right now that if it was so clear to, you know, extend all these guys, I think that they would have looked at it, you know, in a harder way. I still think that, you know, one or a couple of them might stick around long term. But again, it's complicated based on the performance. So I think you got to say that, you know, the management is in an interesting spot based on inconsistent performances from core guys.
That's John Shambi, the voice of the Chicago Cubs on the Marquee Sports Network. You'll start hearing him in spring training rather soon as Marquee will be doing 13 games all from Sloan Park this spring training. Boog, when you look at the top storyline for the Cubs, what would it be in your mind as far as coming into spring training? And if you were forced to, as we are sometimes by our producers when I do the Marquee Network with you, pick one thing, what would be that one storyline that you would be watching the most?
I mean, I think I'm most – look, the headline on the team, it's the core position players, and I think you'd have to say it's Bryant Rizzo-Baez. And how are Bryant Rizzo and Baez going to perform this year? I think that's the thing, right? Because They're guys that have performed at an elite level. You know, you're talking about one guy's won an MVP, one guy's been a runner-up in an MVP, and then the other guy's probably been the most consistent of the three. So I think to see what level of performance they get from those guys, I think, is the headline. Look, I did the playoff games, okay? So, I mean, I studied up on what that season was like, and I watched them, and it doesn't make sense that a team with this group of guys finished 10th out of 15 teams in runs per game. It does not make sense. So I think that you'd have to say, Bruce, that the headline is how are those guys going to play and how much of a bounce back do they have offensively? How good an offensive team will this be? You know, can they get up to being a middle of the pack team in runs per game? Could they be in the top third? And what type of bounce back do they actually get from those three dudes? I think that's the one that I think is probably the, you know, the most interesting, I think.
Boog, since you took the job, you've been really generous with your time here on the station, and I've always wanted to ask you this if given the opportunity, and here you are. So when we heard David Ross become a manager, he was pretty open about, okay, it's going to be very difficult for him to it's an adjustment for him to manage his friends, guys who were his teammates, and now he's going to have to be a guy who criticizes them, holds them accountable, all these things. And I know everybody knows how your relationship with David Ross is one of pretty good friendship, going back to Atlanta and then working together at ESPN. And now you are calling, you know, as many as 130 of his games where he is a manager and basically his first full season. And you are in Chicago. And I just wonder, has that gone through your mind? Will you have to watch yourself? Are you? I know that just in the way that you do your job, you're very honest, you're very candid, and sometimes that's great for the audience and is great for who you are, but I wonder if it's great for the people that you're being as candid and honest about, and has that become something that you've thought about at all, how you will approach basically calling games for one of your good friends?
It's a great question, and my answer is no. No, I have not thought about it, but to expand on it, I will tell you, being around David for 3 years and working with him like in the booth, because we just spent so much time together, I never had a question about his ability to manage his friends and give it to them straight. Like, it's just the way David is. He's somebody who leads. His truth is his truth. And one of the things that I love about him is I do think that he's always come at it and still does from a place of, look, Anthony Rizzo, if you are not doing it properly, I'm going to tell you that. And that doesn't do anything to erode our friendship. And similarly, I guess there is, I literally have never thought about it. Is there a chance that I might say something on the air that he is going to be upset about? Yeah, maybe. And he'll tell me. And if I don't agree with him, I'll tell him back. The closest we've come is I jokingly said to him, you know, don't yell at me. Don't yell at me. And he, you know, as a joke, and he'll say, don't ask dumb questions. So, it's one of the things. There's no feeling of trepidation on my behalf, and I think I can speak for him or on his behalf. It's part of what I think in the end makes him good at it, and he'll keep getting better at it and be one of the better managers at it. Because I think he's secure enough in himself to say, look, this is what we need. And if he really is upset with me about something that I said, he'll tell me. Now, I think that we come at it from a position of respect with one another. And I'm just excited to talk baseball with him. But, man, I don't worry about it. I know that, look, in the same way that he's willing to tell, you know, Anthony Rizzo a hard truth or Chris Bryant, I think that if I give it to him and he's not happy and he asks me to explain it, like, I think he's willing to hear that as well. So there's nothing about this in that regard that I worry about. I really don't.
John, the most intriguing, polarizing story that made me very happy and very confused all at the same time was the signing of Fernando Tatis Jr. to a $340 million contract this week after not even having played a full season. I think it's great for San Diego, the fan base, the sport, and I think at the same time it destroys the mentality of any of these GMs or owners who want to sign guys like Lindor, Baez, you know, all the great shortstops that are going to be free agents after 2021. And what does that say about the sport itself, where they cry poor and say, you know, they've lost so much money, and then a small market team like San Diego has two $300 million signings in 3 years?
Yeah. So I will tell you this. I hear you. I hear those the last two things. I have nothing to. I mean, it's San Diego, for goodness sake. It would appear they're doing okay. You know, so they clearly have the money. I would say this to you though, Bruce, that as it relates to this sport, Here's what I would want to get. The system needs to change. Because the one thing that's happened, and Bruce, you've been covering this a long time, longer than me by a lot, and so you've seen it, you know, and your perspective on it from the advent of, you know, even from free agency, like looking at it that way would be my point. When free agency started, and for the longest time, general managers paid guys based on what they had done. That is never happening again. Ever. You have a new group of smart, really talented general managers, the vast majority of them, who are paying people based on what they will do. And that's how it should be. The problem with that is this. The 0-3, even 0-6 guys get hosed. And then some guys who end up getting... So the 7-year, middle-of-the-road type guy really gets... Mm-hmm. Screwed.
Right.
The guy that is adding value in year two should be able to make more money than what he's making, because the guys who put together six really good years, you know, who are middle reliever, spot starter, but not closer type, not the highest leverage type guys, you know, aren't going to end up getting that pot of gold at the end of the rainbow the way everybody used to get. So, do you understand my point in terms of the Tatis
thing? Yeah, of course.
They're paying him based on what he's going to do. And to that end, I think that's a good thing. But I also would say, you know, they've got to figure out a way to blow this system up, because all these guys that are holding their breath waiting for the end of 6 years to get paid, okay, so Mookie Betts, fine. But for a lot of these guys, they're going to be holding their breath, and they're in a tough spot
yep.
for the Whit Merrifields, or, you know, like, I this is a random one, but a guy like for the Yankees, like Chad Green. Chad Green's mm-hmm. a nice pitcher. He kind of gets disappeared in that bullpen, but they use him a lot and work him. And again, it's all relative. But, you know, you wonder at the end of it with Chad Green, a couple miles an hour less on his fastball, and he's given MLB six really good years. And then when it's time for him to hit the open market, the payday is not going to be there. So I'm not sharpening my point the way I want, but I guess what I want to say is I do think it is necessary. You know, the Tatis thing is extreme, but for these guys to get paid earlier based on what they can do, because none of these guys, or very, very few of them, certainly not the amount that used to, are going to get paid on what they have done.
Well, I think that's exactly right, Boog, because you look at this year's free agent market, and I guess Trevor Bauer aside, a lot of these guys, their contracts that they have had to sign, the short-term deals with maybe lesser
right.
money, I know it's pandemic-induced, but it's exactly reflecting what you're referring to, is that what you have accomplished does not mean as much as the potential that your presence implies and you're getting paid for. So that is evident in the free agent market, I think, as we've seen unfold this offseason.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this all continues to evolve, I guess.
Well, we'll let you prepare for Texas, West Virginia. We appreciate your time. It was a lot of fun, and look forward to visiting again down the road.
God, I am a gas bag. I mean, what did I give you? Three answers? How long-winded am I? I need to work on that.
No, that's the perfect guest. That's perfect, perfect guest.
Bruce got Boog, up, thanks, had a cup of thanks coffee, a million. Went and made breakfast. I get you. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Boog.
Take care, Boog. Thank you.
Boog Sciambi from the Marquee Sports Network, the new voice of the Cubs. Bruce, that was fun. He's going to be an asset, and I do think that he is, you know, arguably you could make the point that he may be among the best acquisitions the Cubs organization has made this offseason.
Well, you pointed out something really interesting, David, before we go to break, and our phone lines are going to be open for the rest of the show before we get to Grody and Rosenblum at 11 o'clock, 312-644-6767. But the point you made, David, which was so interesting, you know, is that he is going to be a guy that takes some people on, and he's not going to be a guy just sitting back and not having an opinion about something. He's going to let the fans know when something's right and when something's not right. And I think him and JD are going to be an interesting coupling of guys who bring out, you know, the good when it's good and point out the bad when it's bad. And in that case, I'm really looking forward to his broadcast.
And I'm looking forward to hearing what you asked David Ross about some of the relationships that are different now in a pandemic world that we live in moving forward between the media and the Cubs, and it's related to his relationship probably and how he will view some of the things that maybe Boog Sciambi says in the booth. But we'll look forward to that conversation when we come back. Bruce, 312-644-6767. If you've got a thought, if you've got a question, let Bruce Sarai know. Inside the Clubhouse here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Welcome back to Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score with Bruce Levine. I am David Haw here between 9 and 11, 52 weeks a year, talking baseball on the station. Just got done with a very good conversation with Boog Sciambi, Bruce. And I do believe that when I asked him about his friendship and with David Ross and how that would relate to the way he does his job and how he, if he's conscious of it at all, I was struck by the fact that he never really considered that. And I don't have any reason to doubt him. I think that probably speaks to why he is such a good broadcaster, is because he is, you know, he doesn't really worry about things that he shouldn't worry about and doesn't let things get in the way. He is humorous. He is insightful. And I think that he will take the same approach, whether or not the manager of the Chicago Cubs is one of his really good friends that he's known for a long time or not.
You know, you add on to that, David, the idea that you've built your credibility by putting time into these relationships. You put time into talking to people. You build a trust with them. You build a credibility. That's what John has done over his career. That's what hopefully, you know, the people who are best in the media do to be able to enhance the coverage so that you can deliver whatever product you're delivering, whether it's on the air or writing or whatever. That comes through because of that trust that you've built with people and the knowledge that, you know, if David Ross hears something that John Sciambi says that's a little bit negative, that there might be some credence to it because of the fact that this is a guy that pays attention to his homework, does it, pays attention to his relationships, does that well. Those are all part and parcel to being who you are and why you end up with a job, that huge job that he has with Marquee.
And Bruce, you know, it's tricky. I mean, over the years, and your experiences are more vast and longer than mine, but we both have been in situations where you want to maintain that professionalism, and I don't want to say that it's compromised, but certainly challenged by the fact that you have personal relationships and you develop connections with people that sometimes their understanding of the job that you have to do is going to be different than the way that you do interpret that responsibility. And nobody expects everyone to agree all the time. That's naive. And so it's different, I think, when you're a broadcaster in a booth calling a game than maybe if you're a reporter around the team on a regular basis and depending on what your role is, whether you're, you know, a beat writer, a columnist, whether you're a reporter or a host. These kinds of things are kind of nuanced differences, but it does all speak to this. The repetition, the day-after-day relationships that you're able to develop are important to the job that you do. And those realities have changed. And that's why I thought, and this is what we're getting to. You asked David Ross a really interesting question about the relationships with the media and how different they are this year. And this was how he responded, Bruce, to your question.
And then I don't, you know, have any inclination of how to do you guys' job and what best suits you. So I think there's a happy medium for what everybody wants somewhere of maybe not the extreme of where we really don't get to develop relationships with you guys and interact with you guys. Like, that was something that I valued as a player and being around the media members that are there, especially the ones that are there every day. And then also now being in this job where we're separated, but I know there's a lot of familiar faces. So I don't know if that's finding a happy medium between the two is probably what would be my comfort zone. But I'm in a different seat now. I don't want to speak for the players or for you guys, but that's just my opinion.
How's it changed your job, Bruce?
Oh, it's made it much more difficult. And you know, again, David Ross responding to my question about now that as reporters since last year and into this year, we can't develop any personal relationships with players or coaches or managers because we don't have any one-on-one time. Everything's done on Zoom. So he responded that way. And my job is totally impacted. You know, look, I pride myself in anything over the many years I've been doing this is my personal relationships with people and them confiding in me and giving me, the chance to go out there and report inside information, things that are going on, bringing up new subjects, new ideas from individuals, being able to add on to conversations like you and I would have on this show because of the knowledge I have now. I'm subject to getting the same information everybody else is. And, one-on-ones are rare, if never happening. And that's why it's great for our show and Matt Spiegel when he does Hit and Run on Sundays starting very soon when spring training starts, that we can bring people on to talk about questions that we have. But that is not available to most reporters right now. And in the long run, David, the worry is by BBWAA and other media outlets is that mm-hmm. this will continue on even when we can go back to seeing people again, that they will incorporate some of these rules to limit access so fans will not be able to share in all that information that we throw their way.
Here's the paradox, I think, too. And I think it's something that is maybe a little inside baseball, but hey, we are inside the clubhouse 9 to 11 every Saturday morning. Look, the teams benefit from that insight that the media gets and that they develop those relationships. They benefit from that even in ways that they don't want to acknowledge. They may feel that it's an intrusion of their privacy at times and a pain in the butt and a nuisance at others. But frankly, the better you are at your job and the reason that you are, for an example, I'm talking to you, so let's use you as an example. The reason you have been able to do what you have done at a high level for such a long time is because people have let you in and they have let you have, you know, insight into their thinking and maybe some information at times. And so the fans benefit from that, but so does the team, because information is, you know, knowledge is power, and it's better to know what we're seeing and interpreting that than to be on the outside wondering and speculating on nonsense. So I wonder, moving forward, are teams going to be thrilled that there's not going to be that kind of intrusion any longer? Or are there some people still within the organization that recognize the value and are going to be disappointed that things have changed maybe forever?
Look, this is more a players' association than ownership, okay? You have to understand this negotiation that's going to take place in December for a new CBA is all predicated by the Players Association, and not necessarily what all the players think, because they don't, that less media in clubhouses, less information getting out is a better form of protection for their players. They don't need protection for their players. These are grown men. These are people that take care of themselves. They talk when they want to talk. They don't talk when they don't want to talk. They don't need to be protected from us. What the sport needs is the information out there and the uniqueness about some of that information being out there that makes fans still more interested in baseball than any other sport, because it's a sport that travels for 7 months, sometimes eight, and you need all that extra information to keep people interested. That's the difference in baseball compared to the other sports. 200 games a year, 7 months out of the year. So if you want to hurt the game, and again, it sounds self-serving, but I think I'm objective enough to know the difference between being able to get information out on your sport, being good for the sport and good for those individuals, as to people doing business like the NFL, where they just want to shut everything off because they already know they have the attention of the fan every Sunday. It's the most popular sport in the world.
Well, you've lived it. You've proved it. And I think that is a point worth making and well put, Bruce, because of the way that baseball is sort of more of an extended conversation on a daily basis, more than the other sports are allowed to.
Sure.
Or frankly, that they welcome. So that is well put. That is what we have to say.
What are they protecting themselves from, David? I mean, you know, you answer that question. You know, why would you want to protect a player? These are grown men. They will learn from experiences, good and bad, just like we do in every walk of life. Why would you protect a player? Why would you
protect
a young guy?
There's a sensitivity, though, Bruce, that players these days probably are a little bit more reactive and responsive and sensitive to criticism or perceived criticism. Maybe it's the age of social media where we are all just a tad bit meaner. And maybe it is just a baseball versus football versus NBA thing. I'm not quite sure, but I do think that it does harm the sport in terms of the way fans are able to get information on a limited basis. You know, and everybody is basically, it homogenizes the coverage of it, which I don't think is good for everybody or anybody.
Agreed.
So. All right, Bruce, that is what we have to say. We have been talking a lot. Let's get to the callers. Let's get to the people who are listening. 312-644-6767. You're out there, Mike. You're out there, Otto. You're out there, Joe. We will get you when we come back. We promise. Welcome inside the clubhouse. Come back with us. Take you to the top of the hour until we get to Saturday Suckage with Mark Grody and Steve Rosenblum. I just like saying Saturday Suckage every week, Bruce. It's a lot of fun. Bruce Levine, I'm David Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
In an ideal world, we would perform really well, and we would be on the, you know, be on the buy side of the deadline and be focused, on maximizing 21, you know. But I think, you know, that's the best scenario. If we struggle or if we're, you know, not in the race to win the division, then we have to think about different things. And I've said a number of times, I think that's one of the hardest decisions that a president or GM has to make is when to stick with this team, when to push in on this team, and then when to think about the future. And I think, yeah, obviously the team's performance and the standings are going to determine that. But it is a difficult decision, but it's a critically important one.
Welcome back to Inside the Clubhouse. Bruce Levine with David Haw here until 11 o'clock. That was the voice of Jed Hoyer talking about trying to thread the needle. He was on earlier this week with the Bernstein and Rahimi show, Dan and Layla, weekdays 9 to noon, and that is something that was very interesting. Good interview from Jed. Bruce, we will get to the phone calls, but what was your overall takeaway from what Jed had to say on the station and the tone he set for this season for the Cubs this week?
Well, I think he's, you know, standing up for himself a little bit in the organization by saying, you know what, and this is more subliminal, I don't think in words, but he's saying, we believe what we're doing is good. We believe that we're going to have a good team. We believe we're going to win this division and still get younger and better going forward. We believe that maybe we can sign some of our free agents, you know, whether it would be free agents, whether it's Baez or Bryant or Rizzo or Kimbrel. So it's not all doom and gloom from a winter that they have certainly gotten bashed. There's no doubt they've taken a beating, and a lot of it is comparative to what's going on the South Side with a young team adding on and adding depth to what appears to be a World Series challenger. So from all of that, I think he's feeling better about himself, standing up and saying, look, we're a team that won a division last year, whether you know it or not. We're a team that had a 500 or better record every year since 2015. We've been in the playoffs five or six times. I think we have nothing to hide from.
The Score listener line is powered by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. Let's go there. Let's talk to Mike in Lakeview. Mike, welcome inside the clubhouse.
Guys, good morning, and I have a Sox question for you, Bruce. You know, the Sox are talking world championship, and that's great, and that's wonderful, but it seems to me they pulled up short at the end of the winter, and that we still need a right fielder or an outfielder who can come in when Eloy and Eaton both get injured. And every Sox fan knows they will get injured, and we still don't have a fifth start. Well, it's true. I mean, come on, let's read that. You know,
no, I'm not. I'm laughing. I'm laughing at the irony of the truth, and I'm not laughing at your question.
Yeah, it's true. And then we don't have a fifth starter, and it's frustrating to see all the, you know, and I know we're talking about middle of the road free agents and guys on 1 year contracts, but all the activity across the major leagues, everybody's picking up somebody, and we're seem to be standing pat. And I love Adam Engel, but he can't play two positions at the same time. And the thought of somebody realistically suggesting Carlos Rodon as our fifth or sixth starter. Are the Sox just shut down, or are they waiting to pick their spot for one more or guy to, you know, what are they going to do for the rest of the spring? What can we expect to fill those holes, or do they have holes? Am I wrong?
David, and thanks for your call, Mike. It's a really good question. And I think the cool thing about the question for me, David, is expectations are so greatly high now for the White Sox, who've been down for so long, that it makes me feel good as a Chicagoan that their fan base can feel good about their team, to the point where, let's say, you know, can't we get Babe Ruth? I mean, isn't he available at this point?
Well, I mean, my first reaction,
and again,
you know, I welcome the phone call. I think you embrace the expectations if you're the White Sox and their fan base. I don't look at their pitching rotation and have a lot of worry, Bruce, and I know that maybe, you know, I don't know if that's overly optimistic or not, and I understand why people want to be want to have the perfect rotation with no questions at all. But I think in terms of when you're putting things together on any roster, I think in any sport, you want to have the right blend of guys who have produced and guys who still have potential, young and old, old and new. These kind of things they make a team work, and you can't do everything and spend in every slot on your roster. So in the White Sox rotation, I look at the fourth and fifth starter possibilities, and I get, as I've told Mully a couple times this week, when I look at Dylan Cease and Michael Kopech, I get as excited and intrigued as I look at Dallas Keuchel and Lucas Giolito, not because of I think that they're better than those two, but because we have yet to see what they're capable of. And that, to me, it's exciting. And that, to me, says if I'm the White Sox and Rick Hahn, I don't want to go get a placeholder. I don't want to go get a guy who may or may not pan out on a one-year, $7 million contract to slide in at number four in the rotation. I want to see Cease, and I want to see Kopech, and I want to see them every fifth day.
And you can throw Lopez in there, too. What is the situation that's similar between Kopech and Cease and Lopez? The situation that's similar is the problem is between the ears, okay? That is what they have to solve most. The stuff is off the chart on all of them. Lopez has tremendous stuff. Cease has a 98-mile-an-hour fastball, which was ranked fourth in baseball for starting pitchers last year as far as hitting that number almost 97, 98 more than anyone else, and a wipeout slider. The situations for those two guys, and it'll be remain to be seen for Kopech, who's missed 2 years, is between the ears. It's in the head. The ability to go out there and believe in yourself when things go poorly. That's why Ethan Katz has been brought in. That's why they have changed some of their philosophy there, because as great as Don Cooper was, and he certainly was one of the greatest pitching coaches of the last 25 years, no doubt about it, the message wasn't getting through to these guys. So there's a change there, and we will see if Ethan Katz can impact this. I agree with you. I think stuff-wise, they have plenty to go around, including Carlos Rodon coming back and hopefully being healthy for the first time in 6 years.
Let's go back to the listener line and talk to Otto, who is in Westmont. Good morning, Otto. Welcome inside the clubhouse.
Thanks for taking my call, guys. Dave, you sound great. I love the show since you became a part of it. Looking forward to many more weeks of hearing your voice on Saturday mornings. I had a question, though, specifically for Dave. You can jump in any time, but it was specifically for Bruce. Bruce, when I look at the Cubs organization, I see a massive company in a giant media market with tons of potential to earn money, particularly when this pandemic, which is ending, particularly when it ends. They own all these properties in and along Gallagher Way. They're getting my and other subscribers' money from the Marquee Network. And yet I've heard ownership and now recently Jed Hoyer say that 70% of their money comes from fans in the seats. And I heard you on Dan Bernstein's show say that it was a fact that the Cubs make 70% of their profits from fans coming through the gates and being in the seats. I just want to ask you, where did you get that number? Is that from management and ownership?
That is direct
journalism. Was there some journalism done on your part to find out?
No journalism. No journalism. Tom Ricketts came out and made that point. He's made it over twice, and the journalistic part is I've confirmed it with other people in the organization that 70% of their gross revenues come from game day, not just tickets, not people just walking into the stands, but from the fan experience in that neighborhood, in that ballpark. That is the truth, and it's also true, David, for other big market teams like the Yankees and Red Sox and Dodgers. They depend greatly on the fan experience showing up.
Absolutely. And Otto, let me jump in and to offer a bit of journalism here. So last May, I wrote about this on 670thescore.com, and you're right to be skeptical. I would be if I were a Cub fan. I wouldn't want to believe this either. But when you look at and you compare, let's say the Atlanta Braves. The Atlanta Braves are the one team because of Liberty Media. They do have to file publicly, because it's a publicly held sports franchise, information that gives you a glimpse of what the Cubs are up against, and maybe it's a more comparable apples-to-apples comparison. So in 2019, the Braves had a record $476 million in revenue. According to this filing after that year, 63% of that was attributed to game day revenue. And the Braves were 12th in attendance based on that. The Cubs were 4th. They had 6,000 more fans per game than the Braves, who were saying that 63% of their revenue was attributed to game day revenue. So it's not far-fetched, and it's not out of whack to think that, based on those numbers, the Cubs could claim 70% of their revenue is from the game day experience. That's the journalism that backs up those claims. You don't have to buy that, but I think that you'd be naive to ignore it. And I think that is why we have these sort of discussions about, yeah, you're right, we get it. They don't have the revenue they've had at one point. You still would like to see them be a little more aggressive. That's my opinion. But it's all fair in terms of looking at it in a way that those numbers aren't just fabricated.
Look, David, a great point and great backing up with the factual numbers. The fact is, if the Cubs gross $500 million, people are already saying you're making too much money, okay? And then when you take 30% off of that or 70% off of that, and you lose and you lose $140 million off of that in 1 year, people aren't going to feel bad for you because you're a billionaire owner, you're a billionaire franchise, and they expect you to keep up with all the good things you've done for them over the past 10 years. As the owner, Tom Ricketts said from the very beginning, his first press conference, we're going to win a World Series, we're going to take all the money that we get from this, throw it back into the ballpark and the franchise, and we're going to be consistently good for a long period of time. He followed through with all of that. He brought in a general manager president that followed through with all that. Now, like every franchise, and just ask people in Philadelphia, San Francisco, or Detroit what it's like after 6 years of competing, and then all of a sudden your farm system can't keep up with it, and you're not a good team anymore. The Cubs are trying to avoid not being a good team for a long period of time by making some changes now.
Let's squeeze in one more phone call. Joe is in St. Charles. Welcome inside the clubhouse, Joe.
Good morning. with regards to contracts, you know, it seems to me that, like, guys, they should be negotiating, like, a period of time with a built-in min-max based on performance. So you don't get stuck with Albert Pujols for 15 years and stuff like that. Does that make sense?
In an ideal world,
David, you
Joe,
can take that.
Yeah. But collectively bargaining that, good luck, because that is not what the Players Association is going to agree to. It's one of the most powerful unions in all of sports, Bruce, and I just don't think it's very realistic to expect it.
Well, you know, it's going to be tough because, you know, everything screams salary cap and salary bottom, you know, for keeping Major League Baseball in time and in tune to what's going on reality-wise as far as money goes. And as you said, baseball is the only sport where the players do not have a salary cap, and they're going to hold firm to that. It's going to be a tough negotiation in December when they try to get a new CBA.
Before we get out of here, Bruce, quickly looking ahead, what is the big story you think or stories that we're going to be following this week? I know that we'll be talking to you, you know, throughout the week on the Mullen and Haw show. You'll be on all the other shows. You are on Twitter. You are everywhere, 670thescore.com. What do you think the big next step will be for the Cubs and the White Sox?
Well, the position players report Monday, so that's the storyline, David. You know, the core three, the core four, what they used to be as far as free agents for the Cubs, possibly of 2021. The young and upcoming great young players with the White Sox, that'll be your storyline. And, David, we have people to thank, including our good friend John Shambi, who joined us for the new voice of the Marquee Network, as well as Cody Hoyer, the bullpen pitcher for the White Sox. David, people can follow me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine, and writing on the Score with the Cubs on the score website every day, 670thescore.com, Cubs and White Sox as well. You have a great week. Thanks very much to our producer as well.
Brandon Fryer did a great job getting us on the air. Bruce, thank you for your time, patience, and for getting those guests on our show. That is the music there playing us off the stage. Next, stay tuned for Saturday Suckage with Mark Grody and Steve Rosenblum. For Bruce Levine, I'm David Haw. Thank you for joining us on Inside the Clubhouse. We'll be back next Saturday, 9 to 11, right here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? MaintainX is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With MaintainX, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try MaintainX for free today. Go to MaintainX.com/AI. That's Maintain and the letter X.com/AI.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bearers a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.
Hi, everybody. I'm Maury Povich. On my podcast, On Par with Maury Povich, I'm going to sit down with the icons, the stars, and the faces at the very center of today's big cultural moments. With everyone from comedians Josh Johnson, Dan Soder, Leanne Morgan, to newsmakers Don Lemon, Joy Reid, Aaron Parnas, and so many more. So join me for new episodes every week, because nothing is off limits. Great conversations. They're always on par. Follow and listen to On Par with Maury Povich wherever you get your podcasts.